And you are listening to Law and Gospel on this Thursday, February the 28th, in the year of our Lord, 2013, the last day of February. I'm Tom Baker, your main host, but with us as a co-host is the Reverend Wes Reimnitz. Hi, Wes.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. And yourself?
Pretty good. You're going to get some snow down there?
Yes, but as soon as it hits the ground, it disappears.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it was really snowing yesterday, but none of it stuck. So are you in Springfield or Havana, Illinois?
I'm up in Havana. I got a meeting this evening.
Okay. Any snow going up there?
Nope. We had it earlier in the week. We had it on Monday and some on Tuesday and a little on Wednesday.
Alrighty, what we're going to do, get right into ruminations. It's an opportunity for you, the listener, to eavesdrop on pastors as they talk about various issues that may be occurring in the church or in the world of theology. And if you'd like to phone in, don't hesitate to do so. If you're in the St. Louis area, 505-7850. And toll free from anywhere in North America, 1-800-730-2727. When I was a pastor at St. James in University City for 28 years, it wasn't at all unusual. In fact, I would start my Bible classes asking people, did they have any questions off the top of their head before we got into the main lesson? Are there any questions, Wes, that you've been asked about in Bible class, say, in Havana recently that you think might be a good discussion for our listeners?
Oh, we get quite a few. They're quite a group. They search the scriptures. One has been about the resurrection of the dead. What will our bodies look like?
Well, hopefully they'll look better than they are.
Well, yes, a whole lot better than what they are. But, you know.
Now, explain that. What are they thinking?
Well, you know, one of them said that they had heard that some come back as babies, some as children, some as young people, adults, older adults, very older adults.
You mean at the point when they die, that's how they're going to appear in heaven?
Right.
Oh, I see, as babies. And what's your thinking on that?
Well, I've been reading, trying to read the various commentaries. I've only run across one dogmatics book that talks in that fashion. The rest seem to indicate that there is a probability that it will be at the age at which you die. But
well, if you're a baby when you die, does that mean that you stay a baby in heaven the whole time?
Yeah, I don't know. It brings up the Bible passage that everybody quotes. Is Revelation chapter 20, verse 12. I saw the dead, great and small, standing before the throne, and the books were open. And that's what they cue it off of, that the age that you die is the age that you'll be in heaven. But
well, are they talking about small and great in the sense of size?
Yeah, that's, well, I tried looking at the Greek, and I didn't get any determination in it.
Now, I've always taken that to mean, you know, those who did not have much of a reputation on earth as well as those who had a wonderful reputation. The small and great might be, you know, individuals who are lay people who just do regular work in their vocation. The great could be the apostles. That's how I understood it. I didn't think of it as the size of the body.
Right. I would agree with you because Jesus talks about the first shall be last and the last shall be first. You know, the equality of those that are saving, but we also talk about how they shine like stars. So, you know, I wouldn't only say that it's just the apostles and the work of the apostles versus the various vocations. I mean, you probably have seen it in your own church where you have lay people that are just tremendous people of faith and love to give, love to do the work of the Lord, just, you know, just could never stop them from wanting to do enough for the faith that they had in Christ.
The Bible verse that I always kind of keep in mind, the great resurrection chapter, 1 Corinthians 15,
Yep.
How are the dead raised up, and with what body do they come? And Paul uses the analogy of farming, that when you plant seed or you plant item that you want grown, you don't plant the item. In other words, if you're going to grow corn, you don't dig a big hole to put a whole stalk of corn in or a whole cob of corn. You just do a seed. And verse 38 says, but God gives it a body as he pleases, and to each seed its own body. Now, I don't know where I got this from, but it was somewhere in the seminary, a professor, and I just can't recall which one, said that he imagined that we would be born in the prime of life. Remember, Adam and Eve, when they were in the garden, they were never babies.
Right. That's good.
Yeah, they were conceived and created, shall we say, as adults. In fact, it's one of my main arguments why evolution is wrong. If you took a typical person who believes in evolution today and you took them into the garden on the eighth day after creation began, there's no way he would guess that Adam and Eve are only 2 days old.
Right. And you see that with the stars and the light that's shining, they say it takes a billion years
yes.
for that light to come there. Well, when it was created, it was already shining towards the earth.
Exactly. See, this is where they get their billions of years. They know that light travels at 186,000 miles per second. I mean, that's pretty fast. But some stars are so far away that it would take millions, if not a billion years, for the light to reach Earth, and we see it. So they just guesstimate, therefore, that the earth must be that old. And what they don't realize is when Adam and Eve, you know, finally, you know, married, he gave her a ring, which was a diamond, I guess. Well, I'm kind of making this up. But I'll tell you, all he had to do was go in the ground and the diamond was there. Whereas normally a diamond takes thousands of years going from wood to coal compressed to a diamond.
Right.
You know why I know that?
How do you know that?
I saw a Superman movie. And he was in the jungle, and they had lost the diamond of their idol. And so he took a piece of coal, and he pretended to put his, well, he put his hand into a pond and looking for it. And while it was in there, he really clenched it tightly, and it came out as a perfect diamond.
Yeah, I remember George Reeves doing that in a movie.
Yeah, and that's how I learned that diamonds come from coal, which comes from trees under great pressure. But you see, the earth was created with age.
I think I like your explanation. That, I think, makes more sense than some of this other stuff I was reading.
Yeah, the professor had said that we're probably going to be in heaven at an age of between 18 and 21, which is what most people think is the prime of a person's age, and we would all be at that age. But we're going to be able to recognize each other. We do know that.
Right, and I think, you know, the scripture passages I saw there was the widow's son that was raised by Elijah. You had Lazarus, who was raised from the dead.
Right.
You know, and of course, Jesus coming back from the resurrection.
Although they didn't recognize him on the road to Emmaus.
Yeah, they did have a problem there, didn't they?
But it says specifically that he had hid their eyes from them. So why do we as Lutheran pastors have such a difficulty answering this? I thought we were supposed to know all these theological questions.
Which theological question are you talking about?
Well, what kind of body are you going to have? How old are you going to be when you get to heaven?
Well, what you had talked about, the prime of life, that's what I learned at the seminary in that. But I think the way you explained it from the time of the start of the creation of the world with Adam and Eve, I think is a very good explanation.
The point I'm making is the reason we can't say for sure is because we're Lutheran. Which means we only can tell you for sure if there's a Bible passage.
Well, it tells that we will put on incorruption, you know, that our bodies will be free of all our defects, our marks of old age, sins removed, you know, the physical defects that we have are all gone.
Yes.
All right. That we do know.
Yeah. we hope that would be true. I have a good friend who's blind, and he doesn't think he'll be seen in heaven. He doesn't see blindness as a problem. And I just don't agree with that at all. Because one of the ways you know the kingdom of heaven is in is not only the lame walk, but the blind see. So our phone numbers are 505-7850 or toll-free 1-800-730-2727. And we're going to go talk to, hello, is this Worth? Hello, you're on the air. Yes, do you have a question for...
Well, I tell you what, when I started listening and you were asking Pastor Wes if his Bible class asked any interesting questions, and our Wednesday morning Bible class is, that and the Saturday evening, which you've taught, and our Sunday morning is always good too, but that Wednesday morning group is kind of unique. And yesterday we had a question about tattoos. And, of course, Leviticus 19, verse 20, talks about not cutting yourself for the dead or tattooing your body. And the question that we have is this still true for Christians today? Should we not have tattoos?
So you're taking Leviticus 19, you say, verse 28 and following. Let me read it.
Verse
20.
It's 27 and 28.
I think it's 27 and 28, but particularly 28. You shall not make any cuttings in your flesh for the dead.
Yeah, I've only got one good eye.
Okay. Oh, do you have a tattoo over the other one?
By the way, Tom, yes. Worth is a member here over at St. Paul, Savannah.
Well, I kind of figured if he's talking about your Wednesday morning Bible study.
That's right.
You know.
His wife is my head organist, you know.
Oh, okay. Well, then I met her. Sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's very good.
Now, it's kind of interesting. The very next verse is, you know, do not prostitute your daughter to cause her to be a harlot, which, by the way, is the only verse in the entire Bible that prohibits that. There's no other verse that says a father should not have his daughter become a harlot, but this is the only verse in the whole Bible. So there are some people who would say, well, you shall not make any cuttings in your flesh, that's tattooing, and if that no longer is in effect, then how about prostituting your daughter? Is that okay to do that then? And so theology is the art of making distinctions. And one of the important distinctions that I think we have here is to take a look carefully what it says. How do you understand this, Worth? You shall not make any cuttings in your flesh for the dead. Do you understand what that means, or have you got any...
I think that the pagans were doing things, rituals and things that, for their deceased. And I think this is what it's referring to. The thing of it is that when cuttings on your body, what about the piercings, all the
earrings.
Rings and baubles and things that they put in their noses and their tongues and their belly buttons and...
The verse that I would look to explain for the dead is actually 1 Corinthians 18, where Elijah is having fun with the prophets of Baal, who are trying to get, you know, God to come down and, do the thing they want him to do. And Elijah says, cry aloud, for he is a god. Either he is meditating, or he is busy, or he is on a journey, or perhaps he is sleeping and must be awakened. And so the prophets of Baal, this is interesting, they cried out aloud and cut themselves as with their custom with knives and lances. So in the context of the Old Testament, I think the ceremonial laws are trying to keep us away from doing idolatry. And it's really interesting that the verse just doesn't say don't cut yourselves. Of course, we'd have to be against surgery then. But do not make any cuttings in your flesh for the dead. It's actually a form of idolatry that they were practicing. So, well, the only way I would say that that is against tattoos today, Wes, what would you think if one of your members walked in and they just got a new tattoo and it said Allah?
That would be a problem because that would be according to Muslims, you know.
Yes.
And yeah, we'd say no. That's not in keeping.
You see, the distinction between ceremonial laws, and it was really interesting on the morning show yesterday. Pastor Clayton was talking about how many of the ceremonial laws prohibited things that were not really sin. But, for instance, he was talking about unclean food, and he said he had seen a study that the unclean food falls into a category that is food that really has to be properly prepared or else somebody could become sick. And it was kind of interesting, therefore, without having the right kinds of preparation for cooking that kind of food, God had declared it to some degree to be unclean. But today, for instance, we eat pork because pig was one of the unclean foods, and we have no problem with it. And that's on the basis of passages in the Bible. One of the most important ones would be Ephesians chapter 2, verse 14, where it says, Jesus himself is our peace, who has made both one and has broken down the middle wall of division between us, having abolished in his flesh the enmity, that is the law of commandments contained in ordinances. In other words, the ceremonial laws are abrogated. We don't have to slaughter lambs. We don't have to have our children circumcised. We can eat meat. Remember Peter on the roof? God says, eat this unclean meat, and three times he wouldn't, and God says, what I have declared to be pure, don't consider unclean. So, Wes, what comments have you got to add to this?
I would agree with you. I mean, that was some of the things we were kind of discussing a little bit, too, that if, as you said, Allah, and I said anti-Christian type tattoos that you might come across, we would have a problem with it. Because we did have a young man join our church who had some tattoos, but none of them were what you would call anti-Christian in that nature, and we accepted him into our fellowship.
Well, you know, you also had the problem that if you put a tattoo on, say, of your girlfriend, and then you get a different girlfriend, you always have to get the one with the same name or else you're in trouble.
Of course, I kind of like Pastor Wes's comments as we kind of wound this one down. He said, you know, your body is a temple, and it's where Jesus resides. And you wouldn't put graffiti on your house. Why would you put graffiti on God's house?
Yeah, I tell you, it's kind of interesting. When people go to get a job now, you know what the employer does? He takes a look at their various social media, like Facebook, Twitter, and sees what they're writing there and also what they look like. You know, a lot of times they'll show their tattoos or this sort of thing. And it makes a difference as to whether you're hired or not. There's this one show I really like watching. It's these two guys go around and they find junk everywhere. What are they called? Pickers.
The Pickers.
American Pickers.
Yeah, but remember the girl that they have who's their secretary back at the office?
Yeah, we were talking about her, too.
Her whole body is, it just turns me off, you know.
Yeah.
So, You know, it's really up to individuals. I'm not going to say somebody like that can't be a member of the church or not, but there is a thing about having an understanding when you're around certain people. It's kind of like language. I used to listen to, they have this woman on this radio station here. She's very conservative, but during the last 3 months, she started swearing like a blue streak. I think she's trying to be a man or something, but I can't listen to her because of all the swear words she uses. And she was never used to be doing that before. So,
but Tom, real men don't swear.
Oh, okay. Well, then you're not listening to some of the other talk show hosts that are men. That's the point I'm trying to make here.
Yeah, right.
So tattoos, from a Christian point of view, tattoos are something that are called an adiaphora. Would you explain that, Wes?
Adiaphora talks about things indifferent, because it's kind of a silent sort of term. So there's what you can go either way, depending on how you use it and what you do with it.
I've seen some T-shirts of people wearing T-shirts that have actually really bad swear words on. And I always make a point of stopping them and telling them how ridiculous they look, which maybe I shouldn't be doing because you don't know some of these people. But be that as it may, I think that's just really ridiculous. And a proper tattoo, a small one or something, I'm not going to say anything about that or whatever. But look how many basketball players are getting them all over their arms and such.
Barbed wire and all kinds of stuff. I don't know. The same way with the football players. We're watching that on the NFL more and more.
You know what is one of the biggest businesses right now in regard to tattoos?
Removal.
Very good. Yes, a lot of people get to a point where they say, you know, I was kind of young when I did this. I don't want it on anymore. Everywhere I go, I got to wear a shirt, can't go swimming or anything like that. So removal has become a big business, and it's not easy to do that, but they do have techniques.
Yeah, my dermatologist says it hurts more coming off than it did being put on.
Right. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. But I'm still going to, you know, bring people into the church who have tattoos because, you know, God loves everybody. And I might have a personal, like a lot of people just don't like smoking and don't like people who are smoking. But we don't excommunicate people for smoking. So if somebody smokes and want to become a member of the church, I'm not going to have a problem with that.
As long as they smoke 15 feet away from the door.
Well, yeah, we didn't allow smoking, you know, in the church or near it. But we had the ashtrays closer than 15 feet to the door. Okay, well, thanks so much for calling, Worth.
Oh, you're sure welcome.
Okay, we're just
going to... Have a good day, and God bless.
You too, sir. Thank you. And let's go talk to Lee. Hi, Lee. We got a few minutes. How can we help you?
Oh, good afternoon. Yeah. In regard to tattoos, you were talking about my son, who plays an instrument in the church band, Contemporary Service. He has a tattoo. I think of something about the Trinity and I don't know, some other religious, I forget now what it is, but I'm an old 75-year-old woman, and for my own body, I'd say, God didn't create me with a tattoo, and I'm not going to go out of this world with a tattoo. But my question is, when in the second article, when Jesus ascended to heaven and sitteth on the right hand of God the Father, what significance is it about sitting at the right hand of God the Father Almighty?
Wes?
What significance is it?
Yes, no, we heard you. I'm just getting you. Wes, do you want to reply to that?
Well, it reminds me of Ephesians chapter 1, where he is in control of the whole church, the whole world. He rules from there.
In fact, if you take a look at Revelation chapter 5, Lee, you'll see that God the Father is sitting on the throne, and in his right hand is a scroll, and Jesus comes up, takes the scroll and opens it, and it's the salvation of the world. So when we talk about the right hand of God, we're not talking about a location. We're talking about a place of authority. that Jesus is God's right-hand man, so to speak, even when he's here on earth.
And in fact, doesn't it say there in Revelation, who is able to open up that scroll, and it is Jesus.
Yeah, even a strong angel cannot do it, because the scroll is the salvation of human beings, and therefore only a human being who is sinless can open the scroll. In fact, chapter 5, Lee, is a beautiful example of the ascension of Jesus into heaven. If you look at it from that point of view, that's what you'll find.
Then also in the, chapter 31, I can't remember now.
Well, guess what? You don't need to remember. Hello? I'm sorry, we're going to have to cut her off because we're out of time. Lee, phone back tomorrow. It's Open Mic Friday. And Lucille, I know you want to get on, but we just don't have the time for you. So you can phone also tomorrow if you have something to say about tattoos or anything else on your mind. And worship services in Havana.
Saturday at 6 p.m. and Sunday 7:45 and 10:15.
And Wednesdays?
Wednesday 7 p.m. for worship, and before that, Lenten suppers.
Thanks much.
Listen,
God bless.
Listen to Law and Gospel on KFUO Radio. You can write Pastor Tom at KFUO Radio, 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. Or email lawgospel@lawgospel.com. Law and Gospel is archived for your listening convenience at KFUO.